And you're listening to Open Mic Friday here. My name is Pastor Tom Baker, and with me is a very good friend of mine, Pastor James Norton. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Tom.
And why is he here? Well, if you listen to the promo, Jim was the state chaplain for the Illinois Army National Guard for what, 2-3 years?
At least 10.
10 years. Wow. And you're now retired?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I am not a colonel or a major or anything. In fact, what did you retire as? What rank were you?
Full colonel.
Full colonel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just totally ignorant of these things. What's the level? You start off as in the National Guard, private, and then how do you
Well, if you start out with the chaplain program, you start out as a second lieutenant. It's given to you. It's automatic grade because you already have a master's degree.
Yes.
So you start out as second lieutenant, then you're in the system. Then you have to go through your schools and have so much time in grade before you make first lieutenant, then captain, then major, then lieutenant colonel, and then colonel.
Hmm.
And if you really shine, you might make general.
We had at our seminary 2 brigadier generals.
Yes, we did.
Dr. Martin Charlemagne and Dr. Arthur Peepcorn.
Charlemagne was Air Force.
He was Air Force.
Yeah.
Well, you still worked with him, didn't you?
Oh, sure. I talked to him from Kansas a few times, Tom.
Yes. The Army and Air Force aren't that far apart, are they?
No, we worked together.
Yes, excellent. In fact, I'm reading a fascinating book that I'm going to be talking to our folks here on Law and Gospel. This is Friday, November the 12th, which just so happens to be the day after Veterans Day.
Yeah, my day.
What did you do, anything special yesterday?
I worked.
Oh, you worked.
Yes.
Okay, as a pastor now that you're retired. But when you weren't retired, would you attend some functionary somewhere?
Yeah, I've given talks at various organizations, veterans organizations or military groups around Taylorville and different places, at memorials. Sure, I've done a lot of that over the years.
Well, the reason I wanted to bring you in is this is a question I get from folks. It's really about the two kingdom doctrine, but it's the whole idea. Supposedly we have a separation between church and state, and yet you were a chaplain in the Army. Did your paycheck come from your congregation or did it come from the American government?
Came from the state.
The state.
I was a state employee.
Is that right? Now,
how does that
fit?
Work?
With the separation of church and state, how do chaplains, how are they able to be religious?
We have in the Missouri Synod a thing called the Armed Forces Commission. When I started seminary, well, actually, when I finished seminary, I thought I'd want to be a chaplain, so I had to submit paperwork to the Armed Forces Commission telling them I wanted to be an Army chaplain.
Uh-huh.
They looked at lots of stuff, and they gave me permission, a certificate that says I'm certified to be an Army chaplain. And once you are an Army chaplain for the Missouri Synod, it's actually an extension of your ministry because you're already a minister, but now you have a little different congregation. And
namely the soldiers.
Yeah. And the reason that our church body does that is you can't hardly ask a civilian clergyman to go into combat with soldiers because he wouldn't know what to do. He's never had training.
You mean civilian, you mean one who's not in the military?
A civilian clergy.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. He could do things for people on a base, but he's never been shown how to put on a chemical suit.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know...
Flak jackets? Or...
Yeah. He doesn't know any of the ins and outs of the military, so he would be like a duck out of water.
Although there was one interesting thing I think you told me once is you weren't allowed to carry a weapon.
Chaplains are non-combatants.
Well, how does the enemy know that?
Well, they don't. Well, they do. Any chaplain that was captured in Korea never came home.
Why?
The enemy saw them as morale officers.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, they don't want high morale, so that was a bad situation for them. Chaplains are supposed to take care of soldiers in the spiritual realm. Will a chaplain on a battlefield pick up a weapon to protect other soldiers? That'd be a personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, I just was watching a PowerPoint on Amendment 2, and one of the points they made is you don't shoot to kill, you shoot to defend yourself, which was kind of interesting.
And your buddy.
Yes, yes.
Right.
So you are allowed to do that in a time of warfare where you have that kind of a crisis.
I'm allowed to shoot?
Mm-hmm.
They don't tell you that.
Oh, yeah.
You're non-combatant.
Wow.
So what you do is totally up to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine some chaplains would defend their friends, and some would not.
Hmm.
So personal preference.
So when you're talking to somebody who's a soldier, and maybe he was shot, let's say he's of a different persuasion than Lutheran,
mm-hmm.
do you speak to him in a way that... well, where you keep his theology and don't bring in Lutheran theology, or are you just unabashedly Lutheran?
You're talking about a wounded soldier?
Yes.
There's no reason to bring up theology. You're tending to a wounded soldier. You're not conducting a religious symposium, and you don't care what faith he is, and
right.
he doesn't care what faith you are, especially if he's dying.
Well, let's say he's in the hospital and you're visiting him.
Yes, okay.
And he says, could you have a prayer? Do you have some comfort for
no
me?
No problem.
You do what?
The chaplain is to facilitate the free exercise of religion. We don't push any religion, but wherever I go, I'm a Lutheran.
Uh-huh.
So no matter what you are, you get Lutheranism.
Right.
But they teach you in chaplain school that we are to facilitate the free exercise of religion. So, if I'm on a base and we have some Jewish people and I don't have a Jewish chaplain,
right.
my job is to get one if I can.
I see.
And if I can't, then I just take care of them the best way I can. I won't commune them.
No, I can understand that.
But I can pray for them and with them because I'm doing the praying.
But would you pray in the name of Jesus?
Of course.
Him? Oh, you would?
Always.
Wow.
Always. I'm protected because there's an Army regulation that says that in the military, a chaplain must operate the same as he does in his denomination.
Billy Graham's son was refused to, he was refused permission to speak at the Pentagon because of his views on Muslim. How do you look at that?
I remember that. Well.
Because he said it was a false religion.
Yeah. And it is.
It is. But after hearing what you just said, he wasn't therefore facilitating, you know, the freedom of religion there,
yeah.
was he?
He was almost like singling it out. Sometimes a chaplain has to walk rather circumspectly so that he doesn't ruffle feathers. Some are kind of concerned about progression through the ranks, and so they don't want to make anybody angry or get a bad OER. Officer evaluation report. That can kill you.
You know, this is interesting because, of course, I would say the vast majority of individuals listening to us right now are not chaplains. But as lay people, and even as pastors, we have a similar kind of a situation even in witnessing to others.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to do it in such a way that by the way you witness, you turn a person off.
Right, right. Right.
And it sounds like that's what you're really talking about. So that, example, if I invited a Jewish friend of mine to dinner, I doubt whether I should serve pork.
Probably not.
Yes.
Unless you know he will eat it.
Well, right. But if he is of a Jewish persuasion and is following their dietary laws, maybe
yeah.
he's Orthodox or conservative, I know the Reformed are much more lenient in that area. Is this the Bible verse I'm trying to figure out here that you would go to? Would it be like Paul, where you become a Jew to the Jew and a Greek to the Greek? Can you understand that in
yeah,
this sense
yeah,
then?
Yeah, you meet people where they're at. And in order to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ, you aren't going to do it if you turn people off.
Yes.
And so you want to meet them where they're at and find some common ground, if you can, to start your discussion.
Yes.
And then go from there.
So I've heard you preach, and I know what congregation. You're in Nicomas, Illinois right now, St. Paul?
For 30 years, next March.
30 years next March. Wow. So, by the time, what time are services there, if you're in the Nicomas country area?
9 o'clock Bible study, 10 o'clock church.
Yes. So you've been there, and you're very forthright. You don't mix words. You're strong. In fact, we had an individual we were interviewing yesterday, Brian, who is an avid listener to KFUO. And one of the things he likes about Lutherans is they're very consistent. I know Chuck Rathard has mentioned a number of times he'll have a whole slew of different Missouri Synod pastors on the Bible study, and they all pretty well talk the same way, you know, because of our confessions as a fine summary of the Scriptures. So you don't have a problem. Okay, you're preaching before soldiers. Is it a Lutheran sermon?
Always.
Really? Now, they're aware that you're Lutheran.
Oh, yeah.
Now, okay, here's a toughie, because this is one that we're working on in our own denomination right now. We know that the Lord's Supper, God invites us to receive the very body and blood of Christ. But unlike baptism, there are some negative consequences if you don't receive it in an appropriate way. For example, if you're an unbeliever, you want to receive it or something like that. Yet there are exceptions. For example, you actually were a seminarian assigned to St. James, my congregation, for some time. Yes, and I remember, I think you had a wife, too.
Still do.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right, yes. Just amazing.
Yeah, I know.
Sample.
She's probably listening.
Oh, what wonderful woman.
Yes.
Just wonderful. It was kind of interesting. In fact, you were one of the first seminarians assigned to my congregation with Peter Kurowski, who we interviewed on Monday. And he's writing a book on close communion, conversations, he's calling it. Well, what's interesting is we do have some exceptions. At St. James, we had a young woman who was at Washington University. And she wasn't a member of the Missouri Synod, but she was a member of another Lutheran denomination. But she disagreed with their teachings and agreed with ours. So not only were we able to bring her under our watch during the time she was at WashU, but we also continued to commune her as an exception. How does this communion and exceptions work out in the military? Is there special rules for the military that maybe a pastor wouldn't be quite up to date on, or how does that work?
Depends on where you're at. If I'm a chaplain on a military base in peacetime, I operate there like I do at a church.
Well, that's interesting.
Most bases have Catholic services, Protestant services, and maybe Lutheran services, depending on what chaplains are there.
Right.
And so I would only commune those who are Lutheran.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
But now in wartime, you carry a chaplain kit with you, and that has bread and wine in it.
Right.
And if I'm tending to a person who is severely wounded, and let's say he asks for communion, I would simply ask him what his faith is. You know, do you believe in Jesus? Do you believe in the real presence? You know, the key questions.
Yes.
If he gives me the right answers, I can't refuse him.
I see. Yes. In fact, you just hit it on the head, because Pastor Kurowski's book, Close Communion Conversations, you know what the subtitle is? Is Asking the Right Questions. You fit right in with what he's saying there. And
sure.
So this is interesting. If you were on the base, that same person who's not wounded or anything, you may not commune, but in time of war under a kind of an emergency situation,
there may be situations where, let's say this person is taking a class.
Yes, correct. I understand.
And we've covered Lord's Supper already. He wants to commune before we're through. I probably have no problem communing the guy.
By the way, this is Open Mic Friday. You can talk about chaplaincy, the military, and how we as lay people and pastors not in the military have many of the same kinds of situations. That's why questions are so important. If you'd like to phone us here, in the St. Louis area, the number is 505-7850. And anywhere in North America, it's 1-800-730-2727. Now, Pastor Norton is a pastor, so we can also have you ask theological questions, and you don't even have to stay on topic. But at this point, we are kind of taking a look at how the chaplaincy within the military is a little different than, say, the pastorhood within a congregation. A part of it, Jim, comes about because in the military, you're somewhat under the jurisdiction of the state, and Romans 13 probably fits in a little bit here.
Well, sure. You have your chain of command, and you have to obey your commanding officers. Hopefully they will understand where you're coming from as a chaplain and not put any impediments in your way. Although one time when I was in Springfield, I was doing services for the OCS.
What's the OCS?
Officer Candidate School.
Okay.
I'm just doing gratis every Saturday, or once a Saturday, once a month. And their commander was a Jewish guy. And I'd always close my prayers in the name of Jesus. Well, I lasted about, well, 3-4 months, I guess, and then he told me he didn't need me anymore.
I see.
And he could do that.
Yeah.
But I wasn't about to change.
No, right.
Yeah.
Could he have said, all right, you can continue if you don't end in the name of Jesus?
Well, I wouldn't have done that.
Could he have said that?
Oh, sure.
Oh, really?
Sure.
So your commanding officer can even tell you what to say?
Well, he was not my commanding officer.
No, but in that situation.
Well,
can they really tell you what to preach?
Some of them could.
But, I mean, do you have to obey it?
No.
But could you become under court-martial then?
No, they can give you a bad OER, write you up, make it difficult for you. There's actually a problem in the Navy right now.
Oh, really?
Well, there was, because Navy chaplains were being told what to say and what not to say.
Is that right?
And you can't do that.
No. But there are probably some pastors who would, or chaplains, who would not go under that rather than lose their job.
Well, like I said before, if you're concerned about your future and wanting to make colonel or something, you might toe the line.
I could see, like if you're on a ship, you wouldn't have a series of sermons why, you know, Mormons, Muslims, and Jehovah's Witnesses are going to hell because they're not believers. That probably wouldn't be the best kind of...
Well, you probably wouldn't do that anywhere.
In a Bible study, I would. For instance, at St. James, when we look at other religions and we say, okay, a Mormon, for example, believes that Jesus was once a human being and became a god.
Right, right.
You know, that's not true.
Uh-huh.
And so I would have no problem criticizing, but what you're trying to say is that you're not there to give them information on your views of other religions.
Well, no, I didn't. We didn't talk about that. If I was having a Bible study at a base,
oh yes,
there's no reason why I couldn't have a comparative religion class.
Okay,
but you would want to structure it in such a way that you weren't belittling any of them. You know, just giving out information.
Yes.
Okay.
Like you could say, Lutherans believe this.
Yeah, Catholics believe this, and Methodists believe this.
Yeah, because like for a Muslim. Yeah. You could say, you know, Lutherans, you know, confessional Lutherans do believe that true Muslims would not be saved, but some Roman Catholics would say they would be saved because they may be doing enough good works.
Sure.
You know, something like that, which is the official position, by the way, of the new Roman Catholic Catechism, that you don't need to be a Christian in order to be saved.
I have the old one.
Oh, you have the old, the Brown Catechism?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... That's not in there, is it?
No,
it certainly isn't. Things have changed in some churches, for sure.
Yeah.
And even, as you well know, in Lutheranism, you do have some denominations that now have no problem with homosexuality, even as pastors and this sort of thing.
Practicing.
Yes. Yeah. But you need to work with those folks, don't you, sometimes?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Although... our new president, Dr. Harrison,
yes,
he has, for the military chaplains, when I was in the Missouri Synod and ELCA, we worked together.
I see.
So we could have services together.
Oh.
Harrison has now stopped that.
Okay.
And that's a good thing.
Okay, that's a good thing.
Because we don't have fellowship.
What you mean is that in the old days when Lutherans were really much closer, in fact, we were in fellowship with some of these people, mm-hmm. but today you could end up looking across the altar and seeing a woman lesbian.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, you're forced to have a worship with her. And you're
right.
saying that the president of our synod, I was unaware of this, has now made a policy that that can't go on.
I talked to Herb Miller, who's now the first vice president. And he said that's the first thing Pastor Harrison did was to stop that.
So this is even more fascinating how the denomination can also set up some principles, and now the state just has to follow along with what President Harrison said. They can't force you to.
Oh no. Your commander cannot tell you what to do.
Okay.
He can give you some guidelines, and he can. Say things that would, it'd be better, Chapman, if you wouldn't do that.
Yes, right.
He
wouldn't
go and tell you, but it'd probably be better if you wouldn't do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, your boss, are they other chaplains who are just of a higher rank? Or
when I was state chaplain, the only one that outranked me would be the chief of chaplains. He's a 2-star.
Okay, a chief of chaplains over the entire United States.
Yeah.
Oh, really? And who's above him? Just the president of the United States?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Well, there's actually 2 1-stars, one for guard, one for reserve.
Oh, yeah.
But then the chief is over them all. And the Army has a chief, the Air Force has their chief, and all the services have their chief of chaplains.
And what are there, 4 services, the Marines, Army, Air Force, and Navy?
Coast Guard.
Oh, Coast Guard is considered another...
I don't know.
Separation?
I think Navy chaplains take care of those guys.
Yeah,
Marines and Navy are kind of together, too.
Did you ever have to go overseas as a chaplain?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Not in combat, just on different operations, yeah.
Really? That's kind of interesting. Because you were also full-time pastor, out of a month, how many weekends would you have to be involved with the National Guard?
1 weekend a month for drill, and then 2 weeks in the summertime for your going to Fort McCoy or someplace.
I see.
But then when, there's always trips you could take. Like I went to Bulgaria for 3 weeks with an outfit. I went to Italy twice for a week just to observe how they did it over there. And there are different things that chaplains can do beside their regular stuff.
So this is something that you would advise seminarians today to maybe look into if they're at all interested in that as a side?
Oh, I just talked to a kid today.
Really?
Yeah.
About the possibility of becoming a chaplain?
Sure. Yeah.
Now, is there something that changes in the seminary education, or does this occur apart from the seminary education to become a chaplain?
You can start the process when you're a seminarian.
Mm-hmm.
You're a student at the seminary, but you're also in the Army or Guard or Reserve, and you have to go through the Armed Forces Commission and get permission, and they would give you that, and then you would find a unit, you'd be with that unit, you start drilling, you get paid, and you have to do your 1 week a month, 1 weekend a month, and then 2 weeks in the summer, and when you get ordained, you're automatically a second lieutenant then.
Wow. Well, look, when we get back, we might get into a couple of subjects that I know I've had some calls on and I've heard others talking about it on listener-supported KFUO radio. That's this whole concept of don't ask, don't tell. And it looks like they were even talking about it in Congress today, so that'll be a subject when we get back from the break.
Coming up this weekend from Focus on the Family. Today's parents are pushing their kids too hard. Are you a pushy parent? Plus, why moms need a break from the family. And we'll present a different perspective on adoption. Stay tuned for that and more on the next Weekend Magazine from Focus on the Family.
Saturday mornings at 10 on KFUO Radio.
Perhaps you're a regular worshiper at the church of your choice, or maybe it's difficult for you to get to church on Sunday morning. Either way, you'll benefit from our live worship broadcasts on KFUO Radio. Our first service airs at 8 o'clock and comes from Trinity Lutheran Church in Edwardsville, where the Reverend Marty Springer is the senior pastor. Our late service begins at 10:45 and comes from Timothy Lutheran Church in St. Louis, where the Reverend Ron Rawl is the pastor. Join us every Sunday morning for the message of salvation in Jesus Christ on KFUO Radio.
When you entertain, are you a nervous wreck by the time your guests arrive? Do you apologize for the house or the food? You know, as much fun as it is to get together and get to know people better, you wonder why we freak out about hospitality. Hi, I'm Phyllis Wallace. Sandy Coughlin wrote The Reluctant Entertainer to convince us we make it too complicated. She'll help us chill out and have fun entertaining next time, Woman to Woman.
Saturday mornings at 9:30 on KFUO Radio.
On the next Lamplighter Theater.
Harry, Mr. Dunn was found lying in the woods, unconscious. Father said that his days are numbered.
Mr. Dunn? Last time we talked, it seemed like there was something you might want to share with me.
Yeah.
Drop him!
I spoke with the governor about your release. Guard, get me out of here.
Harry! Wait, Harry!
Don't miss the next Lamplighter Theater. Here on this station.
Saturday mornings at 11 on KFUO Radio.
Tom Baker back here with James Norton as we're talking about the military. And there's a policy that I'm getting a lot of emails on and wondering where people stand on this. Can you explain the don't ask, don't tell policy?
Okay. For the longest time, the military, they didn't allow homosexuals to serve because they were more prone to being turned by a foreign power and then used. And then under President Clinton, it changed to don't ask, don't tell, to let them serve, and you just don't say what you are. But you're prone to discipline if you say you're a homosexual, if you do a homosexual act, or if you are found out by someone. And so that still takes place. People still get disciplined for being homosexual in the services, but it's supposed to protect the homosexuals from that. Don't ask, don't tell. They just it's kind of like a secret.
Yes. That really puts people in a bad position, doesn't it?
Well, sure can.
Yes. There are so many ramifications of this. What I found kind of interesting is the Obama administration today indicated to the Supreme Court that they did not want the Supreme Court to overturn the policy, even though a judge has. They wanted the Congress to do that.
Well, and they're wanting the chief of the services to discuss it now, too, and give their input.
That's correct. And so... once more, we're in a situation here where there are chaplains who have no problem with homosexuality.
Sure.
Yet at the same time, you've got places like Israel where homosexuals do participate in the army.
There's a bunch of countries where they do serve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Openly.
And people kind of look at that and say, see, that's not a problem there.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know. It's kind of a family show, so we don't want to get into too many details here as to what could happen in the military itself. But the fact of the matter is that as a pastor, if you were dealing with a homosexual, a soldier who confided to you that he was homosexual, do you have a confidence thing between that you can't mention that now to the officers above you?
Right, confidentiality.
Uh-huh. Really?
Uh-huh.
But now that the Army recognizes that.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean that it won't happen. There could be different ways that the chaplain could indicate to someone that somebody might have a specific problem or something, and, you know,
especially if there's a morale among some of the other soldiers, a problem there.
Yeah, it could happen.
Yeah,
sure.
So sure. That's kind of interesting that you have a confidentiality in that area.
Well, actually, a guy who's a homosexual is not supposed to go to a chaplain and say, "Chaplain, I'm a homosexual. Can you help me?" He's only supposed to ask you spiritual problems.
Well, that's a spiritual problem.
Well, yeah, but it's also a physical problem.
Is it part of the don't ask, don't tell policy that he's not supposed to do that?
No, this predates that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I just read about that. I boned up on this a little bit.
Yes, because
I came here, yeah. So you don't go to a chaplain and confess you're a homosexual because that's one of the things you can be bounced for.
But if a chaplain can't tell anybody, how do you get bounced?
Well, like I said, there's ways you can say something without saying anything.
Yes, right.
Yeah. He can always come back and try to give you problems, but he still gets bounced.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Here's another question that came to my mind. You've probably ministered to a lot of soldiers. For example, here on listener support of KFUO Radio, you can't believe the number of emails that we receive. I've been here some 14 years, over people who just get so excited about hearing Lutheran theology and that they actually end up joining Lutheran churches because, in my opinion, Lutheran theology is one of the best-kept secrets. Particularly in the whole world, there's only one radio station that does this on a consistent basis, and it's us. There is no other radio station in the entire world that consistently proclaims biblical theology as God would have us to do. Can you think of some experiences you've had with soldiers in the field that when you share with them this theology, salvation by grace, not by works, that you see some real impact?
Boy, now I got to rack my brain. Over the years, yeah. And I don't know all the time what religion they were before.
That's true.
If any. But I found the best venue for getting the most soldiers is actually in the field. When you're in cantonment on a base, your services aren't that well attended because everybody's busy doing something. But when you're out in the field, especially in a combat situation, people are much more prone to want some spiritual.
Well, that's you're saying you get a higher level of attendance on a combat field than you do at the base?
Oh, always.
Well, one would think it would just be the opposite because the combat field, you'd think there would be people involved in having to do a job or something out there.
Oh, yeah, all the time. And so no matter where you are, you have to work at gathering groups wherever you can. So if you're in let's say you're a battalion chaplain, you have five companies spread out, so you got to get you're allowed a vehicle, and so you have to go where they are.
Okay, and hopefully a company has how many people?
Five.
Well, five people in one company?
No, there's five companies
yeah,
in
I know,
battalion.
Okay.
You're talking 500-600 people.
Okay.
And if you go to a brigade, then you're talking a lot more people. And so you got to go where they are.
So you start with a company, then you go to a battalion, then you go to a brigade in size.
Yeah. Chaplains are attached to battalions or brigades or divisions like that.
Oh, wow. So okay, so let's say like a division would have 1,000 people.
Oh, more than that.
Well, where do you find a place to hold a service?
Wherever you can.
Really?
Out in the woods, in a tent, wherever.
And you just announce it, or how do they get to know about this?
If you're organized,
yes,
you have radios,
yeah,
and so you just spread the word that the chaplain is going to be at your area tomorrow at 2:00.
And people actually come.
Oh, sure.
Soldiers come to hear.
If they aren't off doing something.
I'm trying to think of a movie I've seen about war and soldiers.
MASH.
And MASH is about the closest. And yeah, well, that's almost was a kind of a comical. But in Patton, I don't remember any worship service in Patton.
Well, in Patton, remember he asked that chaplain for a weather prayer.
That's true.
And he gave him one, and he got a medal for it.
Wow.
Actually happened.
Yeah, because the weather changed.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, that's right.
Chaplains have power sometimes.
Yes, especially if there's a patron who thinks you have power.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's interesting. And, of course, it's announced that you're a Lutheran pastor and you're going to be having a service. What kind of sermon would you have in the battlefield?
Lutheran.
Yes, I know that, but... Like, you wouldn't be using the pericopes of the week, I guess.
No.
What kind of passage would you be looking for?
Something that would give them comfort and hope in a dire situation. Like Jesus saying, "Lo, I'm with you always to the very end of the world."
Yes.
It's something that they can hang on to.
Well, you see, I've often done this at seminars I'm at. I ask people for their favorite Bible verse.
Yeah.
Now, you just gave one. And then I tell them, put your hand up if you aren't thinking about a promise. And it's always a promise. Hardly anybody puts their hand up, except Mormons. You know what their favorite Bible verse is, according to the Mormon church?
Nope.
If you do these things, then you'll become like God.
Oh, yeah.
Matthew
5. That's part of their teaching.
Yeah. I know. And it's law.
Yeah. Yeah.
But true Christians have as their favorite Bible verses the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
So do you get soldiers, like every now and then after worship service, somebody will come up to the pastor and say, "Boy, that just really hit home."
Do
people talk to you? And I guess that's what I was kind of looking for in my previous question, that Pastor Kurowski yesterday did a veterans kind of thing in his city. And it was involving high school youth. I think it's the third or fourth year in a row. But he was telling me that one of the teachers was approached by a young teenager who asked, "Is that pastor from St. Paul's coming again?" And he said, "Yes, he is." "Oh, good." Because I like listening to him, you know. And he was convinced that why they like listening is that the content of true Christianity just really strikes on people when they hear that they really have nothing to do. I mean, I can only imagine that there's a soldier who's really worried about having shot or killed the enemy and wonders, is God forgiving him? If somebody asked you that question, how would you respond?
Well, I remember one time we were getting a group of men ready to deploy to Iraq. And I, as a chaplain, had to be there. And one guy was very, very nervous. He thought he was going to go over there and die.
Mm.
And first I said, "Well, son, you know, not everybody that goes to war dies. I'm an example."
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, "Put your faith in God and just trust him that he will take care of you no matter what."
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a faith in Jesus, then you needn't be worried.
Mm-hmm.
So I just tried to turn him to the Lord instead of him turning on himself.
And the way you turn to the Lord from a law gospel perspective is you didn't say, "Well, obey your commander and then things will be fine." You gave a promise from God.
Right, right.
That's connected to the cross of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you do that with a soldier who's not a Christian?
Same way.
Really?
Well, you plant the seed.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If he doesn't know who Jesus or God is, then it's like a real short confirmation course.
Yes.
And you tell him how things are and not what he has to do, but where to look. Yeah.
You know, I'm still fascinated by your previous comment about having a larger crowd in wartime on the battlefield and sometimes at the base, but that's true also in congregations. When 9/11 occurred, that Sunday thereafter, churches were the fullest they've been in a long time.
When times are difficult, people turn to God. Always have.
Yes. In fact, it's part of Lutheran theology that God uses suffering.
Oh, yeah.
And
Peter said, "Don't be amazed at the suffering you're going through."
That's right. Because it's common.
Yeah.
And 1 Corinthians 10:13, there's no temptation that is not just common to everybody, and God will provide a way of escape. So your main task as a chaplain is to try and comfort with the Word of God, regardless of with whom you're speaking, but bringing out the gospel whenever possible.
Yeah. I always said I'm a military pastor.
And what does that mean?
I'm a pastor, but in the military.
Yeah.
There's no difference.
Yeah.
Different congregation. And some people might think, you know, in military, they're rough and tough, and there's no Christian in the military. Well, that's not true. I went to drill one day, and the girl in the office said, "Chaplain, we got to pray for," I forget who it was now, but everybody's going to pray for that guy because he's got trouble. And they meant it.
Yes.
They were just joking.
Well, you know, as we're talking, I've had a little experience not being a regular chaplain, but I have been asked by chaplains at prisons to go there. And one of them was a state prison, and we had one service without the Lord's Supper where there were over 150 prisoners, and then we had a Lutheran service with the Lord's Supper, and there were about 40 prisoners, you know, who attended. But as I'm thinking about what you're saying, I got much the same reaction when I started talking about law and gospel. And there was a couple of prisoners who would attempt to argue with me, you know, about, I remember the one subject I was talking about is that we don't really make decisions to invite Christ into our heart. We don't choose him, he chooses us. And that if you have faith in Jesus, then yes, you have to pay your temporal consequences, but there will be no eternal consequences. And do you get sometimes soldiers wanting to discuss more? Do you have private sessions with them? Is that allowed?
Oh, sure. Yeah. We, especially out in the field, seems like you're always talking theology with somebody.
Really?
Yeah. Not that you get angry about it, but...
No. No. Always talking theology with somebody.
Yeah.
And not necessarily other chaplains.
Oh, no. Men. Women.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But do you sometimes discuss with chaplains theology?
Not so much as we do with the people.
Really? No. Yeah.
Like
a battalion would have just one chaplain assigned?
Yeah, one chaplain per battalion.
Okay. Yeah,
he takes care of all the companies.
Yeah.
And then when you go to brigade, you have a brigade chaplain, and then he's got battalion chaplains underneath him.
Right.
So once you go to brigade, you're a pencil pusher.
Yeah, I was going to say he really has his people underneath doing it.
Yeah.
So what is meant by pencil pusher? He doesn't hardly ever preach or anything?
Oh, yeah, you do, but not as much as you used to.
Really?
And then when you go to the state chaplain, that position, you're almost totally
away. Yeah,
just taking care of your chaplain, or trying to find chaplains because you're going to have vacant spots. Oh, you got
This is kind of interesting. We have an army now that people choose to join, and that's the same with chaplains. Is there a dearth of chaplains right now?
I'm not sure what the score is right now, but when I was in, there was a shortage. Especially of Catholic.
Really?
Your bishop didn't want to let their Catholic go into the chaplaincy.
No. Exactly.
Because they thought they'd lose them.
Well, because they're really short on priests.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And unlike the Lutheran Church, for a priest, he only has the capability of doing the Lord's Supper.
Yeah.
You know, so that if you don't have a priest there, you don't have any Lord's Supper at all.
Not for the Catholic folks.
Not exactly. Right. Because of this indelible character that they think a priest gets at ordination.
Yeah.
You and I didn't get no indelible character, did we?
Not that I'm aware of.
No. I still can't change water into wine. I try it every now and then. Nothing happens. But actually, we're not going to say we change wine into blood, but... by using the words of institution, it's kind of interesting. What happens, of course, is God provides his body and blood in the sacrament, the holy sacrament of the Lord's Supper.
Speaking about that, has anybody ever asked you when it becomes blood?
Yes. There's actually a lengthy controversy going throughout history as to the point, not only when the body and blood are present in, with, and under the bread and the wine, but also when they're no longer present, because that decides what you do with them after you're finished at the altar.
When does it leave, huh?
Yes. For example, I had a professor who believed that the body and blood were present only when the entire action took place, not just the words of institution, but somebody actually receiving it. And at the end of that, he would then take down the wine to the potluck, right from the altar, and they would just have it as a drink.
Huh.
Now, that's the one extreme. The other extreme believes at the very point of the words of institution, it has become the body and blood, in with and under the bread and the wine. And that at the end, you really need to, if you have it left over, some people suggest you drink all of it. Other people suggest that you put it into different containers. Others suggest that you put it into the ground, you know, all those options. But there's actually a controversy over that. So I was discussing with this pastor. I said, well, I think what you need to do is you got to take the possibility into account that it could be from the moment of the words of institution throughout, and therefore deal with it properly. Once you take it downstairs for the potluck, you're already making a decision. It
right.
stopped. And there's no evidence in the Bible it has.
That's adiaphron.
And that word means that that's neither here nor there according to God. He hasn't made it clear as to what you need to do. So I always dealt with it as if it could be. Yet when I was a pastor and took that same wine out, like you have a container also, don't you? And how many times have you said the words of institution over that whole container because of the wine sitting there and the bread? But we do it every time for the shut-ins. In other words, we don't look at her and say, well, we just said the words of institution back. Because we don't want them to have faith just that it's the body and blood they're receiving. We want them to have faith in the words of promise. And that can only occur if they hear the words of promise.
Which
occurs during the words of institution.
Well, then, there's in the Catholic Church, they have folks not ordained, and there's a word for them. They take that to shut-ins.
Yes.
But they don't speak the word, I don't suppose.
They wouldn't in that sense. That's a really good question. I can't remember what they do there.
Because the priest consecrates it.
Yes. And so. Then they'll take it elsewhere. In fact, in the Baptist Church, from their publishing house, because they believe it's only symbolic, they actually will sell you little packets of a wafer and grape juice.
I know you get them in the military, too.
You do?
You can, yeah.
Is that right?
But we don't use it because it's grape juice.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
And they just pass it down the pews. Everybody stays in the pews.
Yeah.
And then at the appropriate time, they'll say, drink or eat, and then drink. But, of course, they don't believe that there's any sacrament going on there.
Right.
Any questions, we'll be glad to answer. We only have a few minutes left here. I'm Tom Baker with Pastor James Norton. And he was the former state chaplain for the Illinois Army National Guard. To answer your questions, let's go to the phone lines right now. Hi, with whom? Wendy? Andy, are you on?
Andy from Kirkwood. Yes, sir.
Go ahead, Andy.
I have been in the hospital at times when the person in the next bed was Roman Catholic and a layperson brought them communion. And as you say, of course, the communion had already been consecrated by the priest. But they do go through the communion liturgy together.
Oh.
And, of course, if you're familiar with the communion liturgy, you can, although you can't receive the communion, you can certainly worship along with them because the liturgy is very much the same as the one that we use.
I've got a really trick question for you, Andy.
Okay.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that the words of institution are necessary to be said at a regular communion of a shut-in?
Well, it's the words of institution that make it a communion. Otherwise, it's just a picnic.
Well, here's the answer that I got from a professor, because I would have said the same thing. But do you know that Jesus never used the words of institution?
Well,
you see, what we're talking about is he said, take, eat, this is my body. Take, drink, this is my blood. Those aren't the words of institution. The words of institution are what the pastor says ahead of time on the basis of 1 Corinthians 11, where he's reminding people. But this professor said the real communion, therefore, occurs when you actually dispense it with those words.
Well, you mean the communion is when the pastor says to you as he,
yes,
as he gives,
isn't that
you,
interesting?
This is the,
yes,
the body of Christ.
Yeah.
You know, one of the wonderful things that did not used to happen when I was younger, but it happens more and more frequently now, is when the pastor says your name as he hands you the host or the cup, and says, "This is the body of Christ given for you," and names you. And, oh, that is really powerful. The first time it ever happened to me, I felt like I'd been hit. Yeah. I almost staggered backwards.
Let me tell you a little different story. I had a wife of a professor who would come up to the altar, of course, and I had a field worker who would do that. He would name the person. And she asked him to stop doing it because she was always wondering if he would get every name right.
Yeah. That's
and
why
she
I don't
could
do it.
Not concentrate on doing the Lord's Supper. And I wouldn't be able to do it because I'll probably forget my wife's name. You know, then what are they going to say?
Yeah, well, of course, you couldn't do it with everybody because...
yeah, but then, you see, therefore, some people are getting something a little extra than others.
Yeah.
If you're receiving the Lord's body and blood, there's no extra to be added.
No. That's a well said point.
We've had a discussion in a group meeting for Bible study about the way in which communion is distributed.
Oh,
and
yes.
One of our visiting pastors recently out of Concordia Kirkwood deliberately paused just for a moment as he said to the communicants, "This is the body of Christ given for you."
Mm-hmm.
He didn't just plop it into their hand and say it. He held it in front of them. And then when he finished saying that, then gave it. And it didn't take that much longer in terms of extending the thing, but it was very, very powerful.
Yes.
It was a delight.
Well, I certainly appreciate the call. Thank you very much. We're just about near the end of our time here. But... I know you do it quite differently than I did at my church, because I preach at your church sometimes, Jim, and it takes a lot longer because you have the people come through twice, you know, or the pastor goes through three times for the bread and then the individual and then the common.
The elder goes through with the little cups, and I come with the chalice.
Yeah. We are at the end of time. Can you please give your church address and once more the time of your services?
St. Paul Lutheran Church at Nokomis, Illinois. Bible class, 9 o'clock. Church service, 10 o'clock.
And if anybody wants to call you, what's the number at the church they could leave a message for?
217-563-2487.
Well, I really want to thank you, Pastor James Norton. We've got some great insights the day after Veterans Day. What a great opportunity to do that. And the other thing is, I'm looking forward in going out to eat tonight with you, because aren't you paying?
Tom's buying.
Who's buying?
I heard you were.
Oh, well, then we're going to White Castle. All right, Tom Baker, on Monday, we're going to be having an interesting subject about a lot of believers think unbelievers are getting a better deal here on earth than they are. We'll talk about that on Monday, because it's right out of the book of Malachi. Till then, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel with Tom Baker Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or at this email address, lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.